Federal News Radio's Tom Temin is here from the Federal Drive, and one of our top stories was on your program this morning is the incredible shrinking cube at a federal agency near you, as Jason Miller put it. What do you think this says about where we're going just quality of work-wise? I mean, I would think the first thing I'd think is if my space is going to shrink, oh boy, I'm not a big fan of that.
Well, it's hard to tell because, you know, at GSA, everybody hates the new headquarters building. They don't say it publicly.
They certainly don't do that.
But they do say it privately, a lot of people. And maybe that's the point. I mean, if it's easier to telework or go somewhere else and you don't need so much space, I think the averages can be deceiving, though. As Jason Miller reported, the average per person in terms of square feet at the State Department is 200 feet. That's big. That's a 20, you know, 10 by 20 office is pretty big. 144 feet at other agencies. Mm-hmm. Even that, if you consider a cubicle is about 6 by 6 feet, that's only 36 square feet. So I think those averages include the public space, the halls, the conference rooms and so forth, possibly even the closets and the kitchens. And you divide all that by the number of employees, that's where you get the number. So it's really hard to tell what an individual employee in an agency will have. But I think there the trend is also toward shrinkage.
It's interesting to me that they're looking at the entire spectrum of real estate, too, because we're seeing Congressman Micah on the House side is after one of the agencies, I can't remember which one, I think it's EPA, for the amount of space that they're using. And a lot of folks are looking at the real estate footprint from a number of different directions, not just per employee, but broadly overall. And Jason is reporting about, you know, the White House's initiative, let's get out of as much lease space as we can and maximize the space that the federal government already owns. Makes a lot of sense. And it does seem that there's still some low-hanging fruit here.
Yeah, there's a lot of underutilized space. And, you know, maybe a better measure would be amount of square space per 1,000 employees, and that would kind of even over the differences between laboratory workers, for example, that may have a lot of space per person, and knowledge workers or, you know, people that do a lot of teleworking that may only need a corner occasionally when they come in. So I think that per headcount may not be the most accurate measure to really determine. And plus, you've got a couple of other big variables coming. The FBI is close to narrowing, along with GSA, where it will go, mm-hmm. and they're going to build millions of square feet, but they're going to close and get rid of millions of square feet. So the question is, can you net out smaller footprint than you had before? And probably you can. If everybody's under one roof, you can reduce the average per person in terms of having redundant meeting rooms, redundant conference rooms, redundant hallways, mm-hmm. things that are replicated building after building after building. Think of it this way. If you have 25 employees and they all have 25 different buildings they're in, they're going to have a lot more space per person because if 25 people are together, they all use the same hallway.
Right. I was struck by some of the numbers in Jason's report, too. Homeland Security Department uses 56 million square feet just in leased space. I mean, no wonder they want to get into St. Elizabeth's.
Unbelievable number, yeah.
Outlays.
But that's national, you know.
That's true. And all of the space, all of the offices in the D.C. area consolidating to St. E's wouldn't eliminate that entire number. But it just does speak to the power that the federal government has in leasing. And it explains why GSA is so intent on going along, it appears, with what the White House is saying about let's consolidate this space and maximize it as much as we can.
Yeah, clearly this is the trend. I think industry has done this tremendously in the last any number of years. I mean, you know, companies like IBM, Hewlett-Packard, the big, you know, West Coast companies, big industrial companies have all, you know, as they have become more knowledge worker oriented and less manufacturing oriented, have reduced their real estate footprints enormously. And if you believe in telework and believe in working in the field more, then why not?
The comments from Congressman Barletta, the chairman of this subcommittee that Jason reported on, are dead on, though, when it comes to the situation that the real estate market broadly is in today. Jason quotes him saying, low interest rates, financing costs at near historic lows. Literally billions of dollars of cheap and abundant capital are sitting on the sidelines waiting to help reshape the government's leased inventory. Now, that may not be the thought that is in the mind of the people with that capital, but certainly they're real estate developers looking for deals where they can put in money up front, build a building or refurb a building, and have a tenant come in there who they know they're going to be able to count on for 10 to 20 years. Well, that there's not a better tenant in that realm than the federal government.
Well, that's right. And then you have the question of should the government buy or should it lease? And, you know, because of the way federal budgeting tends to be, it's easier to lease because it's harder to get the capital up front to mm-hmm. build. But on the other hand, if you are in a building for 30, 40, 50 years, you know, something like the transportation department's really nice new building, relatively new building down near the ballpark, then it would seem to be better to buy. But then that has the cost of maintenance and so forth. So the answer to the developers is, well, if capital is that cheap and land is a little bit cheaper now, then offer a better rental lease rate.
Mm-hmm. Federal News Radio's Tom Timmons here. And it's funny because I've seen just as many persuasive arguments on both sides of that lease versus buy as I've seen about do federal employees make more or less than people in the private sector. You know, you can argue that from a number of different perspectives in a way that somebody reads it and goes, well, that makes a lot of sense.
Well, that's right. It's the same argument that goes for decades. You know, New Yorkers will always say, well, I've been renting for 40 years and I have just as much of a nest egg as someone that bought a house 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you could have the discipline to save in a different way than accumulating capital through the growth and value of your home, it is possible to have a good, secure financial future and not own property. It is possible. You know, for the government, I mean, in many ways, it's a pay-as-you-go operation anyway. It's essentially a cash accounting type of operation. So in that case, it's easier to lease, and you know you have more flexibility in some ways when you're not saddled with ownership.
Another item that made the news this week, and you talked about on your program with Emily, is the changes at the Department of Veterans Affairs. Obviously, Robert McDonald is now the VA secretary, sworn in very privately the other day, and the House has approved the bill that the Senate passed. So that's on its way to the president for signature. That should be any time now. We can expect, or we should expect, I would imagine, given we have a new secretary and that he has new powers and new things that he can do under this bill, I would think we would see a reshaped Department of Veterans Affairs in the not too distant future.
Well, I think so. And, you know, a lot of the local federal trade press is focused on bill passes House that would let people at the high levels of the Veterans Affairs fire senior executives. And I think that's a relatively small and relatively unimportant part of the whole bill. There is big money for expansion of doctors, nurses, and facilities. And I think their biggest challenge is finding the staff, these thousands of doctors and nurses that would meet their needs. That's going to be their challenge. There will be a few heads that roll because there'll be people that were complicit in the whole scheduling scandal. But that's a relatively small number of people. There might be some transfers. There might be some new hospital heads. But, you know, that's really, I think, the smallest part of what Bob McDonald has to do. I think in the future, he's got to really decide how the department's going to set its metrics, how it's going to measure people against those metrics, making sure the metrics are realistic, and ultimately, you know, looking at what is delivered to the veterans population. That's the real long-term job, and I think that's the importance of this bill.